Life is complex. Join us for the simple gifts of wisdom, love, and delight in the written word. The Nicomachean Ethics of Aristotle, translated by D.P. Chase, chapters 4 through 6. Chapter 4. And now let us revert to the good of which we are in search. What can it be? For manifestly, it is different in different actions and arts. For it is different in the healing art and in the art military, and similarly in the rest. What then is the chief good in each? Is it not that for the sake of which the other things are done? And this in the healing art is health, and in the art military, victory, and in that of house building, a house, and in any other thing, something else. In short, in every action and moral choice, the end. Because in all cases men do everything else with a view to this. So that if there is some one end of all things which are and may be done, this must be the good proposed by doing. Or if more than one, then these. Thus our discussion, after some traversing about, has come to the same point which we reached before. And this we must try yet more to clear up. Now since the ends are plainly many, and of these we choose some with a view to others, wealth, for instance, musical instruments, and in general all instruments, it is clear that all are not final. But the chief good is manifestly something final. And so, if there is some one only which is final, this must be the object of our search. But if several, then the most final of them will be it. Now, that which is an object of pursuit in itself, we call more final than that which is so with a view to something else. That again which is never an object of choice with a view to something else, than those which are so both in themselves and with a view to this ulterior object. And so, by the term absolutely final, we denote that which is an object of choice always in itself, and never with a view to any other. And of this nature, happiness is mostly thought to be. For this we choose always for its own sake, and never with a view to anything further. Whereas honor, pleasure, intellect, in fact, every excellence we choose for their own sakes, it is true, because we would choose each of these even if no result were to follow. But we choose them also with a view to happiness, conceiving that through their instrumentality we shall be happy. But no man chooses happiness with a view to them, nor, in fact, with a view to any other thing whatsoever. The same result is seen to follow also from the notion of self-sufficiency, a quality thought to belong to the final good. Now, by sufficient for self, we mean not for a single individual living a solitary life, but for his parents also, and children, and wife, and, in general, friends and countrymen. For man is by nature adapted to a social existence. But of these, of course, some limit must be fixed. For if one extends it to parents, and descendants, and friends' friends, there is no end to it. This point, however, must be left for future investigation. For the present, we define that to be self-sufficient, which taken alone makes life choice-worthy, and to be in want of nothing. Now, of such kind we think happiness to be, and further, to be most choice-worthy of all things, not being reckoned with any other thing. For if it were so reckoned, it is plain we must then allow it, with the addition of ever so small a good, to be more choice-worthy than it was before. Because what is put to it becomes an addition of so much more good, and of goods, the greater is ever the more choice-worthy. So then happiness is manifestly something final and self-sufficient, being the end of all things which are and may be done. Chapter 5. But it may be, to call happiness the chief good is a mere truism, and what is wanted is some clearer account of its real nature. Now this object may be easily attained when we have discovered what is the work of man. For as in the case of flute player, statuary, or artisan of any kind, or more generally, all who have any work or course of action, their chief good and excellence is thought to reside in their work. So it would seem to be with man, if there is any work belonging to him. Are we then to suppose that while carpenter and cobbler have certain works and courses of action, man as man has none, but is left by nature without a work? Or would not one rather hold that as eye, hand, and foot, and generally each of his members, has manifestly some special work, so too the whole man, as distinct from all these, has some work of his own? What then can this be? Not mere life, because that plainly is shared with him even by vegetables, and we want what is peculiar to him. We must separate off, then, the life of mere nourishment and growth, and next will come the life of sensation. But this again manifestly is common to horses, oxen, and every animal. There remains, then, a kind of life of the rational nature apt to act. And of this nature, there are two parts denominated rational, the one as being obedient to reason, the other as having and exerting it. Again, as this life is also spoken of in two ways, we must take that which is in the way of actual working, because this is thought to be most properly entitled to the name. If then the work of man is a working of the soul in accordance with reason, or at least not independently of reason, and we say that the work of any given subject, and of that subject good of its kind, are the same in kind, as, for instance, of a harp player and a good harp player, and so on in every case, adding to the work eminence in the way of excellence. I mean, the work of a harp player is to play the harp, and of a good harp player to play it well. If, I say, this is so, and we assume the work of man to be life of a certain kind, that is to say, a working of the soul, and actions with reason, and of a good man to do these things well and nobly, and, in fact, everything is finished off well in the way of the excellence which peculiarly belongs to it. If all this is so, then the good of man comes to be a working of the soul in the way of excellence. Or, if excellence admits of degrees, in the way of the best and most perfect excellence. And, we must add, in a complete life. For it is not one swallow or one fine day that makes a spring. So it is not one day or a short time that makes a man blessed and happy. Let this then be taken for a rough sketch of the chief good, since it is probably the right way to give first the outline and fill it in afterwards. And it would seem that any man may improve and connect what is good in the sketch, and that time is a good discoverer and cooperator in such matters. It is thus, in fact, that all improvements in the various arts have been brought about, for any man may fill up a deficiency. You must remember also what has been already stated, and not seek for exactness in all matters alike, but in each according to the subject matter, and so far as properly belongs to the system. The carpenter and geometrician, for instance, inquire into the right line in different fashion. The former, so far as he wants it for his work. The latter inquires into its nature and properties because he is concerned with the truth. So then should one do in other matters, that the incidental matters may not exceed the direct ones. And again, you must not demand the reason either in all things alike, because in some it is sufficient that the fact has been well demonstrated, which is the case with first principles. And the fact is the first step, that is, starting point or principle. And of these first principles, some are obtained by induction, some by perception, some by a course of habituation, others in other different ways. And we must try to trace up each in their own nature, and take pains to secure their being well defined, because they have great influence on what follows. It is thought, I mean, that the starting point or principle is more than half the whole matter, and that many of the points of enquiry come simultaneously into view thereby. Chapter 6. We must now inquire concerning happiness, not only from our conclusion and the data on which our reasoning proceeds, but likewise from what is commonly said about it. Because with what is true, all things which really are in harmony. But with that which is false, the true very soon jars. Now there is a common division of goods into three classes, one being called external, the other two, those of the soul and body, respectively. And those belonging to the soul we call most properly and specially good. Well, in our definition, we assume that the actions and workings of the soul constitute happiness. And these, of course, belong to the soul. And so our account is a good one, at least according to this opinion, which is of ancient date and accepted by those who profess philosophy. Rightly, too, are certain actions and workings said to be the end, for thus it is brought into the number of the goods of the soul instead of the external. Agreeing also with our definition is the common notion that the happy man lives well and does well, for it has been stated by us to be pretty much a kind of living well and doing well. And further, the points required in happiness are found in combination in our account of it. For some think it is virtue, others practical wisdom, others a kind of scientific philosophy, others that it is these, or else some one of them in combination with pleasure, or at least not independently of it, while others again take in external prosperity. Of these opinions, some rest on the authority of numbers or antiquity, others on that of few and those men of note. And it is not likely that either of these classes should be wrong in all points, but be right at least in some one, or even in most. Now with those who assert it to be virtue, that is, excellence, or some kind of virtue, our account agrees. For working in the way of excellence surely belongs to excellence. And there is perhaps no unimportant difference between conceiving of the chief good as in possession or as in use, in other words, as a mere state or as a working. For the state or habit may possibly exist in a subject without effecting any good, as, for instance, in him who is asleep, or in any other way inactive. But the working cannot so, for it will of necessity act, and act well. And as at the Olympic Games, it is not the finest and strongest men who are crowned, but they who enter the lists. For out of these the prize men are selected. So too in life, of the honorable and the good, it is they who act who rightly win the prizes. Their life too is in itself pleasant, for the feeling of pleasure is a mental sensation, and that is to each pleasant of which he is said to be fond, a horse, for instance, to him who is fond of horses, and a sight to him who is fond of sights. And so, in like manner, just acts to him who is fond of justice, and more generally, the things in accordance with virtue, to him who is fond of virtue. Now, in the case of the multitude of men, the things which they individually esteem pleasant clash, because they are not such by nature, whereas to the lovers of nobleness, those things are pleasant which are such by nature. But the actions in accordance with virtue are of this kind, so that they are pleasant both to the individuals and also in themselves. So then, their life has no need of pleasure as a kind of additional appendage, but involves pleasure in itself. For besides what I have just mentioned, a man is not a good man at all who feels no pleasure in noble actions. Just as no one would call that man just who does not feel pleasure in acting justly, or liberal who does not in liberal actions, and similarly in the case of the other virtues which might be enumerated. And if this be so, then the actions in accordance with virtue must be in themselves pleasurable. Then again, they are certainly good and noble, and each of these in the highest degree, if we are to take as right the judgment of the good man, for he judges as we have said. Thus, then, happiness is most excellent, most noble, and most pleasant. and these attributes are not separated in the well-known Delian inscription. Quote, most noble is that which is most just, but best is health, and naturally most pleasant is the obtaining one's desires. End quote. For all these coexist in the best acts of working, and we say that happiness is these, or one, that is, the best of them. Still, it is quite plain that it does require the addition of external goods, as we have said, because without appliances it is impossible, or at all events not easy, to do noble actions. For friends, money, and political influence are, in a manner, instruments whereby many things are done. Some things there are again a deficiency, in which mars blessedness. Good birth, for instance, or fine offspring, or even personal beauty, for he is not at all capable of happiness who is very ugly, or is ill-born, or solitary and childless, and still less perhaps supposing him to have very bad children or friends, or to have lost good ones by death. As we have said already, the addition of prosperity of this kind does seem necessary to complete the idea of happiness. Hence, some rank good fortune, and others virtue with happiness.
'Tis the gift to be simple. 'Tis the gift to be free. 'Tis the gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bend, we will not be ashamed. To turn, turn, will be our delight, till by turning, turning, we come round right.